This recording is entitled Ballistic Homeschooling, presented by Hal and Melanie Young. This session was recorded at the 2017 Rocky Mountain Homeschool Conference. This recording is copyrighted material and cannot be duplicated or distributed in any physical or electronic format. For more information on this conference, please visit www.chec.org.
Now we have six boys in a row. Now, when we go to these conferences and this session is in the middle of a conference, then there's always people who come up and they say, ballistic homeschooling, why did you call it that?
And anybody who's homeschooled boys doesn't ask that question. They know exactly what we're talking about.
So we always ask them, you don't have any boys, do you?
No, it's obvious. It's obvious. Well, let's start with a word of prayer because the Lord knows we all need it, right? Let's pray. Father in heaven, I thank you for bringing us here safely today. I thank you for this opportunity to gather together, to encourage one another, to look to you for guidance. And I pray that your spirit would be amongst us, Lord, to encourage us and to point out where we can be more effective teachers for these sons that you've gifted to us. Lord, we thank you for your grace and love in Jesus' name. Amen.
Now, like I said, God gave us six boys in a row first.
Yeah, we had six, and then at the end he gave us two little girls. It was like, wow, we've retooled the factory. I had no idea. They're entirely different. And I remember one time when our first daughter was maybe, she was just able to sit up, and I had her sitting up in the middle of the bed while I was getting dressed or something, and I looked over, and she reached back, and she just flipped her hair back over her ear, and I thought, nobody taught you that, did they? You were born with that. You know, your sons are born different than your daughters, and moms, they're born different than you.
Now, usually we can bumble on for a while and manage homeschooling our boys pretty well until we hit a hard place. And one of those hard places I hit when our oldest was 9 years old.
And he was precocious. Oh, my word.
Oh, he was such a good homeschool student. Listen, y'all, he loved homeschooling. He begged me to teach him to read. You know, when we first had children, we'd read all this stuff about better late than early and all that. And I remember you holding John
standing there in the delivery room, okay? New father, firstborn son. And I'm looking at this little child, and I look over to my dear wife, and I say, honey, you know, he's a boy. We can't push him too soon academically. We're not OCD at all.
No.
Okay.
Well, he came to me when he's three, and he's like, Mama, will you teach me to read?
Yeah.
And so I taught him to read, and he learned to read early. And we thought we were great homeschoolers.
Oh, and our kids.
We thought we were so good at it, you know?
Goodness. Yeah.
And then he hit 9 years old, and the train, the wheels fell off his train. Mm-hmm. And suddenly math was taking 3 hours. And we were lucky to get even that done in a day. And one day we were sitting in the van and we're listening to a cassette tape. Now, wait, y'all are mostly younger than me. Okay, a cassette tape's kind of like a CD, all right?
Okay,
it makes music.
They drive older vans. They know what a cassette tape looks like.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
We're listening to this cassette tape of Gilbert and Sullivan, comic opera, The Mikado, The Pirates of Penzance. We're listening to The Pirates of Penzance, and this one particular song comes on.
I am the very model of a modern major general. I've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the fights historical from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. And I'm very well acquainted, too, with matters mathematical. I understand equations, both the simple and quadratical. About binomial theorem, I am teeming with a lot of news. And many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse. I'm very good at integral and differential calculus. I know the scientific names of beings and animalculus. In short, it matters vegetable, animal, and mineral. I am the very model of a modern major general.
Well, John Calvin heard that, and he said, Mama, when are we going to learn all that stuff? And I lost it. I said, oh, we'll cover all that stuff if you ever get out of the fifth grade. He said, what do you mean? I said, look, son, I can drag you through addition and subtraction. I can drag you through multiplication and division. I can even drag you through decimals and fractions, but I cannot drag you through integral calculus. You want to learn that stuff? You better get off your behind and start working. Well, the next morning, we got up, and he said, Mama, could you make me a list of everything I'm supposed to do today in school? And when I recovered consciousness, I gave him the list, and he got everything done for the first time in a long time. And we realized that he was not motivated the same way I was. And that the things that made me want to work were not the same things that made him want to learn. And that he needed to be handled differently than I did, even though he's so much like me. He needed different motivation than I did. You know, sometimes it seems like our boys are beings from a different planet. You know, they really are different. Our world tries to say men and women are all the same, but they're not. And even if, hey, I am a really good boy mom, y'all. I can ride. I can shoot. I can outshoot all my boys' friends. Mm-hmm. But you know what? My boys have more in common with each other than they do with me. Even the ones that are just like me, because they have something different. God made them differently. He made them in different ways. Now,
some of you may be saying, okay, I know exactly where they're going with this, and they just don't understand that my son is different. See, my son is not this big He-Man alligator wrestler type of son. No, he's sensitive. He's bookish. He thinks a lot. And he's very gentle with his siblings. He's not like that. And they say, you know what? That's perfectly fine. That's within the range of normal. That's good masculine traits. Just recognize there are stereotypes for reasons, because generally there's a basis of truth. And so what we encourage you is as you listen to us really this whole weekend, if we talk in maybe stereotypical or average kind of terms, do what we do when we get a watermelon in the summer. You take the sweet part, you spit out the seeds, and move along, okay? Some things may not apply in your case, and that's okay.
All right. So let's talk about some different stages of learning and what our boys need at each stage and how they're different. First of all, in preschool and early learning, we're going to go all the way up to high school, okay? In preschool and early learning, stop pushing them.
You know, we get the dads come up to our booth and they have these conversations. Say, you know, my wife wants to homeschool our children. And our oldest son is going to start with him this year. And I'm concerned about the outcome. You know, is he going to be able to get into college? Is he going to be prepared for a career, be able to support a family? I'm just really concerned if this homeschooling thing is tenable.
Well, we've had four kids go to college on scholarship. So, it's not a problem. But how old is your son?
Oh, he's three.
Dads are visionary. They look for the future, and that's a good thing. But honestly, we are academic fanatics, honestly. We love to read in our family. We love to study original source documents. But the preschool years are not the time. Okay, the preschool years, it's fun. It's play. That's their learning, working alongside you.
It's exploration is what it is. And, you know, we read those books, and we laugh about them a little bit now because we had precocious kids.
We had three that were early readers and one that didn't read till he was 11.
Right. See, there's a range of what's normal, okay? And we're going to talk about that some more. But the important part of that is that, you know, that initial advice later actually may be better when you're dealing with your boys in particular.
Because boys are made differently than girls. They have different skills. They develop different skills earlier. And 200 years ago, boys didn't go to school till they were 8 or 9. And then they graduated from high school at 13 or 14 and went to college. Now, how did they do that? Well, for one thing, they taught differently. It wasn't that they taught a lot less than we do. They taught it way more efficiently than we do. And so, how do you know when they are ready? Your little boys are ready to start formal learning when you want to teach them most of the sounds of the consonants and most of those short vowel sounds before you open any formal curricula. Because, listen, don't make goals about things that you cannot change, and you cannot change your child's developmental readiness to read. Most kids are ready at 6 or 7, but some kids spontaneously read at 2. Others don't read till they're 13. And so you can't say, well, in our school, we're going to learn to read by this age. Your child may not be ready.
If you want that, you just sign up for a public school and go with the Common Core, because that's what that program's about.
You must be ready at this age. You're not going to do that. That's not wise, right? Well, it's not wise in your home either. So you want to teach them a lot of these things casually to see whether they're ready. If they can recognize the letter consistently day to day and tell you the sound, they may be ready to start learning to read. If one day they can if they can't remember the letter every day it's new, they're not ready. If some days they remember it and some days they don't, they're not ready. And that really confused me. I thought, if he could do it once or twice, why can't he do it every time?
That's because he's lazy.
That's what I thought. I really did. But No, he was dyslexic and he was not ready to read. So you want to, when they can freely and easily, consistently remember the sounds the letters make, when they can manipulate numbers, like, okay, we're going to go, Grandma and Grandpa are coming for dinner tonight. How many forks do we normally use? How many will we use tonight? And, you know, they can do that basic functional mathematics like that. Then you might say, okay, well, let's try some. How do you choose curricula for a young boy? Give you one big rule. Not much writing. Okay, because boys' writing skills develop much later than girls.
In fact, let's talk about that. Developmental differences, there are developmental differences, and it's easy for people to say boys develop more slowly, but really what they're saying is boys develop the skills that we praise in an academic setting, particularly the classroom, less rapidly than their sisters do.
Right, because it's not that boys develop slower.
Mm-mm.
No, boys develop faster in spatial reasoning. And so that's why they'll build these huge Lego towns. And then, of course, they become Godzilla. And
well, that's a different thing.
Stomp it down. But
yeah.
That's because they're boys.
And the gross motor skills, the big motions, okay? I mean, if you've had little boys, you have got the experience of, like, picking them up from the top shelf of the bookshelves multiple times.
Yes.
Or I had one. This was incredible. I am not athletic. I don't know where he picked this up. But I had one that when he was just barely able to walk, he could throw a ball across the room and hit me square on the chest every single time. I'm thinking, whoa, that's incredible. Those big motor skills develop faster in the boys than they do in the girls.
Now.
But what do you look for in a curriculum?
Small motor skills.
Yeah.
And being able to sit still and color within the lines. Did you know that girls color... Okay, if you ask a girl to draw a picture, mm-hmm. you're going to get back a pretty picture. It's going to have a house and maybe some people and a bush and mm-hmm. flowers. Girls draw nouns. Now, you ask your boy, preschool boy, to draw a picture, you get it back, it looks like a mess. And you say, don't say, oh, honey, try again harder to be neater. Don't do that. Instead, you say, son, tell me about your picture.
Oh, this is so cool, Mom. Because, see, there's like a hole in the space-time continuum, and there's invaders from an alien race, and they're coming through here, and the spaceships are coming. But, see, the Air Force scrambles up their fighters, and they're firing missiles, and they say, oh, that one's going to hit. And people are ejecting out of it, and it's just boom. Oh, it's just cool.
Wow, that's an amazing picture, honey.
Yeah, it's all verbs.
Yeah. But see, in the way that we have learned to do school growing up, we reward the way that girls develop and not the way that boys develop. There's no reason for your boy to be doing a lot of writing when he's in the early years. Ask him the questions instead. Like Mom always says, "Hey, my son just hates science."
Said no boy ever. What are you talking about?
Yeah, he hates science.
He hates science.
Yes,
why
he
does
hates
he
hate it. He cries
really?
When we get out the science book.
Really? Why?
What? Well. You know, at the end of the chapter, they ask these questions, and I want to integrate all the subjects.
Oh,
and so I have him answering complete sentences with perfect handwriting and spelling.
Ah, I see his problem there. Yeah, the issue. You know what?
What?
You don't have to do that.
I don't?
No, because
the
see,
curriculum
this one,
tells me to.
That curriculum's written for a classroom. You don't have a whole classroom, do you?
No.
You got one child, right?
Right.
Why don't you ask him the questions orally?
Isn't that cheating?
No, you're the teacher. You're trying to evaluate whether your students learned it or not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because see, the problem is not science. Boys naturally love science, but the writing is difficult for them, especially in those early ages. And guess what? Writing is not science.
No, and that is a good rule of thumb. Teach what you're teaching. If you're teaching handwriting, of course, have them push the pencil across the paper.
And eventually they're going to have to do time tests and write essays for, you know, exams and things like that. They're going to have to learn to write quickly and legibly.
But that's going to be after they get developmentally ready to do it.
Much later.
Yeah. And so in the meantime, you teach what you're teaching. Don't make them hate science or hate history because they're struggling with handwriting. You know, instead, do things orally. Read aloud. Ask them questions. Discuss it. Do projects.
Now,
do hands-on stuff.
Now, let's talk a little bit about gadgets. Okay, now, we guys, we love our gadgets. You know, whether it's a cell phone or a new laptop or a new tool for the garage or whatever, we like our gadgets, okay? Gadgets may be a help for your child or they may be a hindrance, and it's going to be different even for the same child. Like, case in point, I'm an engineer by training, and it, like, causes me physical pain when I hear about second graders being handed calculators in school. No, you've got to learn basic computational skills, doing the math in your head and pushing a pencil across the paper and the rest of that, so that you understand the stupid stuff you're putting in the calculator in high school.
Because I have tutored high school students that didn't really understand what a graph was, because they'd always used a graphing calculator, and they put the numbers in and this picture appeared, and they didn't know what it meant. Mm-hmm. And so we teach them what it means first, but when they get algebra 2 and chemistry, hand them a calculator. Because the point then isn't the adding and subtracting. That's just side issues. They're learning something else.
Right. But here's a case where the gadget actually freed up one of our students. We had one son. He was not dyslexic. Let me tell you, this child could sit down and read a 400-page novel after dinner before bedtime. I mean, he's incredible intake capability, you know, decoding words off paper. But writing was difficult. He's dysgraphic. You often see them together. This child, perfect reading skills, but dysgraphia was killing him. And it was killing us trying to get him to write a paragraph.
Yeah, and he's going into high school. So my brother gave him a laptop. And he starts playing with the laptop, starts writing things. And then one of his other brothers said, you know what, I'm going to participate in the National Novel Writing Month this year. I'm going to write a book.
Ooh.
Well, this child said, well, I'm going to write a book too. Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, I'd struggle to get two sentences out of him. And he wrote 15,000 words that fall in 1 month.
See, what we figured out was doing these motions, you know, the typing skills, the keyboarding skills, that uses a different part of the brain than the small motor skills needed to do cursive. And so, actually, the gadget freed him up to express himself verbally on paper in a way that we didn't expect.
Now, let's talk for a minute about those developmental delays, just briefly, because boys get diagnosed with these more often than girls, because the range of normal for boys tends to be wider than it is for girls. You know, boys hit everywhere in the spectrum in their developmental readiness.
Even in your own family. And like we said, our first son, he learned to read when he was 4 years old. And our fourth son learned to read when he was 11, sort of. And you know what? And that's all under the bell curve. It's all within the range of normal of one sort or another. And so there are radical differences, and you may see one child to the next, and you need to be flexible about that.
Well, it's very discouraging. You know, because I had one mama come up to us at the Pennsylvania conference, and she said, I heard you had a son who was a late reader, and I've got my son's 9 years old, and I don't think he's ever going to learn how to read. He was standing next to her. Oh, I got really mad. I'm a really sweet southern lady, but I got really mad. And so I bent down to talk to him. I said, son, listen, let me tell you something.
What?
If a young man learns to read when he's 5, do you know when he learns to read like an adult?
No, ma'am.
When he's about 13.
Okay.
When he learns to read when he's 7, do you know when he learns to read like an adult?
No.
When he's about 13. Hmm. If he learns to read when he's 9, your age, do you know when he learns to read like an adult?
13?
When he's about 13. Even if he learns to read at 11.
Really?
He learns to read like an adult when he's about 13. Let me tell you something. The later you learn, the faster it'll come when you learn, because you're going to bring an older brain to it. Don't worry about it, honey.
Wow.
And you've got to remember that. The story of the Civil War chaplains was one that was really encouraging to me during this time with our son.
I read a book by one of the chaplains in Robert E. Lee's army, and he documented through this the grand revival that swept through actually both armies during the final years of the war. And they had so many new converts coming in, and you know, they're on fire now. They want to serve the Lord, and they want to read the Bible for themselves. But you know what? A lot of these boys are farm boys, and a lot of them couldn't even write their own names. And now they want to read the Bible. And so the chaplain started teaching, and then they started getting the other soldiers who had a little bit of school learning to help. And then what they found out, that as they tried to teach these young men, that they could take a 25-year-old who had no book learning at all and teach him to read the King James Version of the Bible by himself in 3 months. 3 months. Okay. Now, why was that? Because he was a 25-year-old. His brain had reached its adult configuration. He could concentrate better. His processes were all matured. And so, you know, God wants us to read. God intends for us to read His Word. Your son will be able to learn to read with God's help, even if it's going to be late.
That's one of the big advantages of homeschooling, is that we have the flexibility to keep our children on grade level in every other subject. If you have a child who's struggling to write, then let him dictate his essays to you. This son that struggled to learn to read, he didn't learn to read till he was 11. At 14, he's still writing like a first grader, couldn't spell three-letter words. And he said, "Mama, I really wish I could participate in these essay contests like my brothers and win money." I thought, I picked up the phone, called the North Carolina Museum of History that sponsored it, and I said, "I've got a child that has learning disabilities, a student, is already if he dictates his essay?" And they say, "Sure, just as long as he does his own research." He won number one in the state of North Carolina that year. And it changed his life because he realized he wasn't dumb.
Well, you see, that's the thing. One of the things we found out with our son that had struggles is when you see somebody who's like truly dyslexic and you get them tested across the whole spectrum of academic abilities, you may find that they're at the genius level in everything except their ability to read and to process the written word. And then that's like a broken tooth out of a comb. It's just, there's nothing in that bar. And actually, that was quite freeing for him to realize, hey, I'm not stupid. I just have this one place of handicap. I have a mental limp, as it were.
And so you can accommodate their differences, let them dictate, help them, read aloud to them, read their math aloud to them, and keep them up to grade level and everything so that when the reading catches up, they're there. They dash ahead. That young man that went through all those struggles, he went to college on a full-ride academic scholarship. He just finished his freshman year as the freshman class president on the dean's list. Now, I couldn't have imagined that. At 14, I was wondering if I could teach him enough to get a job at McDonald's. You know, and so don't despair over your boys, all right? Now, it does help to do things to encourage them to learn, to love learning. Get them audiobooks so that they can hear those complex stories and literature, so they can learn what the written word sounds like. And be able to follow complex language and vocabulary. Then when their decoding skills catch up, they'll fly ahead.
Now, one thing a lot of people worry about is, you know, I've got a son and I think he's got a condition, but I don't want him labeled. I don't want to get a label attached to him. And you know what? There's reasons for that if you're in the social milieu of the schools. You know, you don't want to get tracked in something that he can't ever get out of. But guess what? You're operating your own school, and you need something different than to protect your child from the other students. Okay.
So if you get a child till they're about 9 years old and they're not reading yet, it's probably worthwhile to have them tested. Because maybe they've got a problem like Sam, that they're dyslexic. Then when he got to high school, we had him tested again. He got accommodations on the SAT. He was able to dictate his essay on the SAT. And his true, what he was capable of, he was able to show. And so don't be afraid of labels when it's just you. You can use those labels when you need to and ignore them when you don't. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about some gender differences in learning.
Our oldest son wanted to study economics, and we have a friend who's a professional economist, and he said, "Oh, you ought to go check out Hampton Sydney College. They've got a really good economics program." Now, Hampton Sydney is a small private school not too far from us. It's out in rural Virginia, but it's got an interesting quirk about it. It's one of the only all-male academies left in the United States. And that's a side issue, okay? But we go to visit. We're talking to the department head. He turns to our son and says, "Would you like to go sit in a freshman class?" Well, we had coached him, so he says, "Yes, sir, I would like to do that." So down the hall they go, and he puts him in the back row of a class already in progress. Comes back. We talk to the department head for a little while longer. And then John comes back, and oh, he is fired up. "Mom, oh, that was so awesome.
Yeah.
That was incredible. I loved it. It was
great.
It was just terrific." We got in there, and the professor has got a proposition up on the board. He's got a theorem that he's talking about. And the students are arguing with him, and he said there were a bunch of knuckleheads, and they shouted at him. And he threw an eraser at one student. "Oh, that was incredible. I love this."
Yeah, I was stunned because I would have felt assaulted in a classroom like that. So how do girls learn best? They learn best in a nurturing environment that's warm and softly lit. It makes them feel safe and comfortable. You know what happens to boys in that kind of environment? They go to sleep.
Well,
yeah.
They do.
Boys like to learn in a brightly lit environment. That's cool and that's engaging, and where you're discussing things and debating things. And you can make that happen for your boys. You can give them a desk lamp. You can have them sit next to the air conditioning vent. You can when you discuss something with them, you don't say, "Come here, sweetheart. Let's talk about what you learned today." You say, "What'd you think about that?" I didn't like this part. Did you like it? What did you like? You know, and discuss it, debate it with him. He wants to wrestle with the ideas and make them his own.
You see, that's how our young guys tend to learn the best, is they want to wrestle with the concept and the idea, not just to say, because Mama said so, therefore, forever and ever, amen. But rather they want to say, well, why? Well, why not? Why not this? Why couldn't it be this way? Well, is it that way all the way to infinity or just for this part of it?
And it's easy to interpret that as sassiness. When it's not sassiness, it's a desire to understand. He wants to take it apart. He wants to deal with it. He wants to argue about it. He wants to discuss it.
Now, one thing that moms got to get out of their comfort zone about is how loud they teach, okay? And we hear people say, I don't want to be a yelling mama. No, I understand that.
Okay, so I have a friend that has four daughters, no sons. Mm-hmm. And she heard me calling one of our boys one day, and she said, Melanie, you should never raise your voice to your children. And if you want your boys to pay attention to you, you should talk softly and you should whisper so that they learn to listen for their mother's voice. Yeah, I tried that. They never knew I was talking.
Yeah, so see now, God gave us two little girls at the end, and I thought, I'm going to test this out. And one of those little girls was hyperactive. See, she was on some heart medication, and it, wow, she was like a little fireball. So she came running through the room. She's about 3 years old at this point. She comes running through the room like Halley's Comet. And I just said, hey, Katie, I've got a secret. Whoa, she did a U-turn and got right at my face. What is it? Oh, man, she picked up on that. But the boys know, what you've got to do, you've got to engage their attention, all right?
Yeah, let me say this. Boys seriously do not hear the tones of the human voice as well as girls do. Now, this is God's mercy because those dads need to concentrate and mamas need to know when somebody gets up in the middle of the night. And so our ears hear those tones more easily than our boys. But we got to recognize that we say, sweetheart, they may never hear us.
That's right.
We say, hey, you, come here, right?
Mm-hmm. You see, the thing of it is, it's like in that wonderful piece of American cinema, The Incredibles. Okay, Mr. Incredible has had a bad day at work. He comes home, and the kids are going crazy around the dinner table, and he's off in his own head. He is thinking about this bad day at work, and he's just, you know, he's not paying attention. And his wife finally turns to him. She says, Bob, it's time to engage. And I always kind of, laugh, you know, because that's me. You know, we have the gift of focus, right, brothers? Okay, you know, we look at these things, and I look at this thing here, this laptop, okay, and this is, I love this. I like my laptop because, you see, this is my work environment. This is my news source. This is my entertainment. This is my, you know, this is my outside window, okay? So I have this fantasy. I have this delusion, you see. I think I can multitask. Isn't that funny? And so, you know, I'm sitting there working, and one of my children will come up and have a conversation with me, and I will talk to them, and then they'll go away, and it's like they never existed.
Hey, honey, what does Sam want?
Samuel, I haven't seen him. Why?
You were standing there. He was talking to you. He was right beside you.
Was that Samuel?
I don't know what you told him, but he got the car keys and he left.
Ooh. Okay. So, see, I had to realize, okay, that's just the way I'm wired. If I've got a visual thing here in my line of sight, then I'm locked in on target, and I'm not paying attention out the sides. And so what I have to say, when somebody comes up on the periphery, I have to, like, disengage from this, turn my head, focus, identify, target. Oh, family member. Yes, what is it? Because if I don't do that, I'm not there. Your
and
boys
so
are the same way in school.
Your boys are not going to be able to focus if there's a TV on in the room. Mm-mm. Even if they're watching good Netflixy stuff, they can't do it. Okay? They won't even hear a word you say. Likewise, God made them to focus. They're also highly distractible. And so sometimes they distract themselves.
Oh, Mama, I've got a question. Can I ask you a question here?
Sure,
okay,
honey.
So in the math, okay.
Okay.
This is like division with two and three digits, and it's
right.
Really hard, okay? So it's like 127 divided by 15, and
right.
You see, and I didn't know it's in what's that bird doing out there?
Son, huh? Math. We were doing math.
Oh, there's a bird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he would interrupt himself. Yeah. So for those kids, you know what? They may need earphones so they can listen to music and drown out their siblings. They might need... Oh, and those are also the ones that tend to make noise. And you have to tell them, look, pay attention to what your body's doing. Mm-hmm. They may need to work in a different room. Now, of course, you got to keep an eye on that. Like, you got a teenager working in a different room, and suddenly you notice they posted on Facebook. Then I comment, son, could you come see me?
Rats.
Oops.
She's on to me.
Yeah. And one thing that helps these very distractible sons is physical exercise. The research shows that boys learn better when they've used their big muscle groups. And that's why the school's cutting down recess to 20 minutes. I mean, they might as well just forget the boys learning the rest of the day. Instead, they need to use their big muscle groups. So moms come to me.
Yes, I'm just,
you know, every day at 10:30, my boy just, it's like he's got ants in his pants. He can't sit still. He can't focus.
Right.
It's driving me crazy.
Oh, gee, I'm sorry. So what do you do?
Well, I tell him, look, honey, we just have 5 more subjects to go before lunch. Let's focus.
How's that working for you?
It's not.
No, I didn't think so.
No, instead, say, son, give me 10 on the stairs. Boom, 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 boom. Have him run up and down the stairs 10 times. Have him do a bunch of push-ups. Have him run around outside. One of our kids, we got one of those little mini trampolines. And it'd be bounce 100 times, read 10 words. Bounce 100 times, read 10 words.
It's the only way we got through phonics.
Yeah. Seriously.
You know, this is really about coping for everybody. You've got to cope with teaching this volatile student of yours, but they got to cope with learning. And if this is something we do a little unorthodox that will help everybody get through the process, then do it.
And we're going to talk more about why they're so energetic and why God made them that way this afternoon in Raising Real Men.
Now, we also have the people who come up to us and say, oh, I am so concerned about my son. You know, he is so active and he is so noisy and there's constant movement all the time. And I just don't know what, you know, his sister's not like that. His sister's, she's so quiet. She sits quietly in her desk and she writes within the lines.
Yeah.
And she always puts little pretty pictures in the margins of her workbooks. And yeah. I mean, it's just, she is a joy to teach. But this boy, I don't know. I'm thinking he's tested or something because it's just, there's something wrong with him.
You know, I think I can diagnose him right now.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you think it is?
I think he's got a really bad case of being a boy.
Ooh.
Yes.
Will he grow out of it?
Eventually, he'll be able to sit still.
Really?
Yeah, but not now.
Oh.
You know, God made them differently than he did girls, and he made them very, very active. Now, look, have you seen one of those labs that can sit there with a corn chip on its nose? Okay, you train it to sit there with a corn chip. But you know what? Every fiber of that dog's being is focused on not eating that corn chip. Okay, every fiber, his tail, is focused on not eating that corn chip. When you make boys sit still too long, they're spending all their energy sitting still, and they've got nothing left to learn with. And so when you get them to where they're just, it's just eating them alive, get them up. Get them moving. Get them active.
You know, this is an interesting piece of furniture here. This illustration is a desk that was designed by Thomas Jefferson, okay? He had one of these at his home in Monticello. And the fascinating thing about it is it's quite tall and there's no chair. There's no chair, there's no stool, there's nothing to sit on. It's a standing desk. It's almost like a lectern or a podium. Because, see, Jefferson realized that he could concentrate more and he could think more creatively if he was on his feet. If he was standing there, and even if he's in one position, but you know, you're never quite in one position. You're always shifting a little bit and, you know, flexing one muscle or another. And so he just found out that helped him to do his intellectual work.
Did you know that before 100 years ago that boys' schools did not have stools for the boys to sit on? They stood up at their desk all day. And that seems shocking to us, but you might be surprised how much easier your son finds work standing up. He can do his math standing at the kitchen counter. Or writing really big. Some of our son, we had discovered this. We'd been doing research, and our boys heard us. And one of our guys went off to school, and he was studying Mandarin Chinese. And he was really struggling learning the characters. Well, he bought a bunch of little whiteboards and put them around his dorm room. He said, it's amazing, but when I write them big, using those big muscles that help boys learn better, he said, they are so much easier to learn. Another son did the same with calculus. He put whiteboards all around his dorm room and did his calculus equations big, and they were much easier for him.
I got to say, as an engineer, I did this unconsciously. There were times when I found myself working on the top of a file cabinet or something. I just put my notes, spread them out up there, or go into a conference room that's empty and just put equations and drawings and such up on a whiteboard, because somehow that helped me visualize what I was doing better.
Now, you can do this. You can go to Lowe's and go back to the paneling section. You can buy a section of melamine, 4x8 section, for like $30. buy a couple of pieces of trim, put it up in your kitchen, and he can do his math great big standing there in the kitchen.
It's just like a whiteboard, and you can clean it off with a window cleaner or whatever. If it gets all goofed up and you need to replace it, it's cheap.
Now, some of you are saying, but then we won't have any written records. Okay, look, we have graduated 4 of our 8 children. They have all gone to college. They've all gone to college on scholarships. No one has yet asked me to see a notebook from the third grade.
Well,
it's not going to happen.
Well, you know, the other part of that is that any time that you need to take a written record, you just pull out your trusty cell phone and you go, and there's your written record, and you can show it to anybody who asks. Not that they ever will, but you can do it and you'll feel better.
Now, I know that some of you are thinking, but I have a child who's really, really hyperactive. There are kids at the far end of the spectrum that are really hyper. We had one that when he went to college, they tested him, and they said they'd never seen a human being more ADHD than he was.
He had, like, permission from the university to pace the back of the classroom.
Yeah.
Because he's one of these guys that if he doesn't have a constant flow of input, he just shuts down. I mean, honest to goodness, he'll go to sleep sitting straight up. And so,
yeah.
You know, sometimes
but
you do
even
have...
Even that kid didn't need to be on meds in our homeschool. We were able to accommodate all he needed in our homeschool.
Mm-hmm.
So, we started out talking about what motivates boys. Let me tell you something. Girls are motivated by wanting to please mama. Let me tell you, boys are not.
Boys are motivated by something entirely different. There was a study done a few years ago in European schools, but I think it applies to ours too. They asked 6-year-olds, what do you think about school? I think it's compulsory attendance, what I'm supposed to think. But at any rate, but they asked them, well, what are your opinions are? Well, when they compiled these down to a few headings, I was fascinated by what they said that the boys' responses were, because it was very much what I would say and what my colleagues would say working in a corporate engineering office on the 18th floor downtown in the state capitol. You know what? They want to say, why are we here? Why is this important? Am I going to be tested on this? You know, does it matter a week from now? Or my favorite, you speak to guys, you know, guys like to lean back, cross their arms and say, okay, I'm ready, impress me.
Yeah.
Okay. Your boys are the same way. Your boys want to know, you're teaching me this. Why are you teaching me this? Why am I have to learn this?
It will help your boys to have an eye on the future, because hammers make a lot more sense if you know there's nails in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so when your boy says, I don't even see why I have to learn how to do this math. Nobody's, you know what to say? Actually, let me tell you how you're going to use this. You're studying area. Did you know you could waste a lot of money on paint if you can't figure out how much area is on your walls?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you give them real life explanations. Look especially to their future. Ask them, especially when they're middle school age, what do you want to do for a living? Now they're going to say something.
Ooh, I want to design video games.
Said yeah. Every 11-year-old ever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't laugh. Mm-hmm. Okay. Instead, say, okay, well, let's look at how you do that. Oh, wow. To get into Stanford's program that teaches that, you're going to have to be able to do calculus. Oh, my word. Okay. If you've got to do calculus as a senior, then you better get busy, son.
Mm.
And he will, because he needs to know it matters.
And you need to give them examples, and this is where you can use some of that integrated adult experiential thinking to help them out. You know, like we've had discussions with parents come up, and the kids are pushing back on certain subjects. You know, I want to be a rocket scientist. Why do I have to study English literature?
Because you've got to learn how to write grants. You're not going to have any money in your department.
Or one day you're going to be responsible for teaching the Bible to your family. And the Bible is full of literary devices. There's allegories and metaphors and allusions to one thing and another. And you know what? Jesus used these things to teach, and we should be able to decode them with the Holy Spirit's help.
Now, boys also love to conquer things. Now, I don't know why, but I have this hesitation to give our kids lists. I'm like, go do this and come back and tell me when you're done and I'll give you the next thing. Well, you know what a boy's response to that is? Go do your math and come back when you're done and I'll tell you what to do next.
They believe that the reward for hard work is more hard work. And so they figure, well, let me just make my hard work easy work and I won't have any more work, I hope. Maybe.
And so he'll take all day long to do that first thing.
Right.
Instead, give him a list and say, this is what you're expected to do today. Now, hey, I want to tell you something, though. When you get done with this, your time's free till evening chores. It's up to you. Now, eventually, they figure this out. And he'll say, hey, do you mind if I get up at 6:30 in the morning?
Why do you want to get up at 6:30 in the morning?
Well, I want to go ahead and get my schoolwork and chores done because I got something I want to do.
Okay, in that case, have at it. That sounds great.
Yeah, so at 9:30, he's lying flat on his back on the couch reading a novel. And his brother says, what are you doing? I'm going to tell Mama you're reading a book during school board time.
I finished my schoolwork.
I hate you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So be sure to go ahead and give them the list. Tell them what's expected of them. Put them in charge of it. Boys do better managing when they're in charge of their work.
Now, one thing that you moms, we love you, and you are so sweet and so gentle, and you just want to nurture and nurture and nurture and everything. And you know what? Your boys are going to struggle with this.
Okay. So you remember in PE when we did the parachute game, and you threw the parachute up, and it came floating down.
Yeah.
And you lifted it up. And it came floating down. It was so much fun.
What's the score? Who's ahead?
Nobody wins. Nobody loses.
What's the point?
Yeah. A guy was not a part of creating that game.
No.
They want to win.
Win or lose, we want to compete.
Now, let me tell you something, okay? Now, when women undergo stress and discomfort and pain, we shut down. We turn inward. And a lot of times, we can't even remember it afterwards. That's why we all have more than one children, right? Okay. When men undergo stress and discomfort and pain, they think more quickly, which makes perfect sense if you look at the division of labor God has given us. Because if my son is injured on the battlefield, I want him to think more clearly than he's ever thought in his life, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not telling you to injure your boys. That's not true.
No, but I'll tell you what.
But you can see this happening.
You can see this happening.
Like okay. Their T-shirts. Blah.
Yeah, I think boys' T-shirts should come like with rubber collars because they're always gnawing on them.
Yeah, mess, yuck.
Yeah. And
their pens, yuck. There's teeth marks on them, and they chew their tongue sometimes.
Well, I gotta confess. If I'm working in a workshop or I'm doing something that's taking a lot of concentration, I'll catch myself chewing on my lip or doing something like that. Just putting just a little bit of stress on me, just a little bit of discomfort.
It makes you think more clearly. And so, how can you engage this? So, moms, we look, honey, here's a fact sheet for
yes.
you to do,
okay.
honey, and
okay.
it tests how well you know the facts.
Okay, how much time do I have to do it?
I don't want him to feel like a failure. What if he loses hope? Take as long as you need, sweetheart.
Okay, I can make this last till Thursday.
Instead, the pressure of the clock can motivate them. Like when we have kids that hit this 3-hour math lessons, we have a plan.
We just call them in and we say, okay, son, we know how long this is supposed to take. We've taught this same curriculum to 6 kids, okay? So when you get ready to do your problem set here, I want you to come sit by me at my desk. See, I work from home, so I can do this. I say, you come sit by me at my desk, and I'll time you. Okay, now this is not going to be like an episode of Chopped or something, you know, where they're going to say, 10, 9, 8. You know, we don't do that kind of stress. But all we do is just say, ready, go. And then I just start the stopwatch. And if they ask me, how's my time going? I just say, what problem are you on? And then I'll gauge. Do you need to pick up the pace? You're doing good, whatever it is. Just let it run out. And then when they finish, you say, okay, all right, you finished this problem set in 2 hours and 43 minutes. Okay, I think we can do better than that tomorrow, don't you think? Yeah.
Now, in our house, you get a reward anytime you do a lesson faster than your personal best time, mm-hmm. or you do a particular fact sheet faster than your personal best time, they will bust their buns to do it too. And it's crazy because sometimes the reward is a gummy bear. But it's not that, it's the winning of it. In fact, sometimes when I think everybody's too slow on their facts, I'll pull out fact sheets and have all the younger children do fact sheets, and for time. The older kids are so competitive, they'll come back and they'll say, hey, Mama, give me one too. I'm going to show them how fast I can do it.
Yeah, the high schoolers are racing each other on their single-digit addition problems. What?
Yeah. Boys are competitive. Use it, baby. Now, boys also hate to ask for help.
Okay, this is something that you moms may not realize, but see, we guys have a code. It's unwritten, but we all understand it, right? And that is that you don't ever send up a request for help, okay? The SOS never goes out. This is the SS Titanic. You know, they sent the SOS after they hit it, you know. And so, you know, you've had these discussions in your car. Honey, I think we're lost. No, it's all right. I'll figure this out. No, really, why don't we just stop and ask for directions? Okay, you might as well just say, why don't you just lie down on the ground and let the trucks run over you? Okay, because you see, if I stop and I go into that gas station and I ask them directions, hey, can you tell me how to get back to Route 25? Then they're going to say, oh, sure, buddy, you're not from around here, are you? Let me see your man card. Okay, and he gets out his hole punch from under the desk and goes, and puts a hole in it. And after you get a number of holes, you like lose your birthdays. You have to shave your mustache. I mean, it's just terrible. You can't let your manhood down like this. But now see, we have technology on our side. Technology's good because we can just say, don't worry about it, dear. Everything's under control. Siri, where am I? Tell me. Siri, please tell me. Okay, we can ask our phone. The phone is neutral. But you see, your kids don't have the phone. See gadgets earlier. And so what we need to do is teach them it's okay. You know what? You're learning. I don't expect you to know it. That's why you're a student. And if you don't understand it, ask the dumb question.
Right. And so we try to raise independent learners. Now, one way to do that is to have them working on their own as much as possible. At 7, that's going to be really limited because you take your eyes off him, he's gone. And so you say, finish this while I work with your sister right here in front of me, right? And they're going to grow in independence, and then, well, we'll talk about that in just a minute. Mm-hmm. They hit the middle school slump.
Yes, and that's when the train, like, doesn't just come off the rails. It went out the back wall and into the street past the station. This is middle school.
We're going to be talking about this, I think, tomorrow in the parenting preteens.
Right.
But their brains and their emotions are changing.
And they're changing at the same time and in ways they don't know how to manage, and frankly, you don't either.
And seriously, you cannot look at a preteen kid and say, okay, I fully expect you to be able to do this because you could do it when you were 8. Because part of the brain that's controlling his executive functions literally unravels during the preteen years. It comes apart and remodels into the adult function. But in the meantime, he doesn't have it. He doesn't have focus. He doesn't have attention. He doesn't have problem solving. Does that explain a lot?
Yeah,
it does. It explains. And in the meantime, they're on this emotional roller coaster with the hormones. Well, what does that mean?
Well, if they were distractible before, now they are like totally gone. Okay, this is really, they're extremely easily distracted.
You're talking to them and they're on planet Coosbane.
Yep, they're off on an adventure in their heads. And they're going to have trouble remembering things. And you're going to say,
times have I told you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we learned this last year. What do you mean you don't remember?
And he really can't remember to do his chores every single day.
And all this adds up. It means that school will take forever if you give it the chance.
Yeah.
And that's going to engender some feelings in their hearts. Okay, your sons are going to feel like academic failures.
Yeah.
And this is really important because, you know what, the girls do everything right, and they color within the lines, and it's all sweet and love. And the boys are struggling along through elementary school, and then they hit this slump, and they say, well, apparently I peaked at the age of 8, and now it's all downhill from here. Oh, boy.
Those feelings of academic failure can really affect their future. And so you have got to help them pull out of it. How do you do that? Well, first of all, by remembering that what is going on is not usually because they're rebellious or lazy. It's really easy to interpret it that way. How many times, son, have I told you when you get up to feed the dog? Mm-hmm. Why can't you remember? He really seriously can't remember. I know that seems hard to believe, but he really seriously can't remember.
That means you're going to have to supervise him more, and you're going to have to ask him. You're going to have to say, you know, you say, I sent you out to feed the dog. Did you feed the dog? No. Okay. Then you go back and ask him again. Have you fed the dog yet? No. You're going to have to keep, you know, supervising and managing them in a way that you didn't have to a year or two ago.
And, you know, every kid during the preteen years develops obsessions. They get obsessed about trucks, or they get obsessed about raptors. One of ours was obsessed with raptors. He loved hawks and falcons and things. He wanted to be a falconer. Y'all, we're on the road 7 months out of the year. I mean, seriously, this was not possible, but he was focused on it. And your child, it might be, I'm going to be a Navy SEAL, or I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. They become obsessed with things, or they become obsessed with games. They're easily obsessed. Incorporate those obsessions into their schoolwork. And so if he's interested in falcons, buy him books about falcons. Instead of giving him the stupid writing prompt, tell me your 3 favorite foods. He's done that every year since he was a kindergartner.
Instead, you do things like, well, tell me the steps to becoming a fully qualified and certified falconer.
Or even describe your three favorite birds of prey and why you like them.
He'll write a whole book. I mean, this is just a rut that their brain gets into. You might as well drive along in it because it's easier than fighting it.
That's another way of saying engage delight-directed learning. Find out what they're interested in. Now, this is hard because lots of times they're interested in stuff you think are stupid. Okay? You think they're impractical, they're silly, they're ridiculous. Why is he doing this? You want your sons to listen to you, you best listen to them. And so you talk to them. Find out what they're interested in. Incorporate it. Show interest in it. You will win their hearts in a way you won't believe. All right? And this is your time to focus on the basics. All right.
This is a time when you need to be just make sure that he's entirely up to speed on his reading and his basic grammar and his basic math skills, you know, because the next step after middle school, he's going to be jumping off into high school English. He's going to be getting into algebra, and you can't do that if your fundamentals aren't strong.
So this is the time to really focus on getting the fundamentals solid and using delight in the other things. And so what do you do about how do you get him to ask for help? Okay, one way to get an ask for help is say, okay, when you're doing your problem set here, then if you hit a problem you can't do, just write the number at the top and keep going. And when I have time, I'll come back and we'll just discuss the ones you write at the top. That way he can ask for help without really asking for help.
That also encourages him to finish, because we've had some that will get in these problem sets and they get to problem number 6 and they can't figure it out. And they said, oh, well, I'm done. No, you're not done. You've got a problem with number 6, but we've got to deal with that separately. So,
yeah. The most important part is you have got to give them hope. And this is really hard. Because let me tell you something. The preteen years are annoying. They really are. They're the hardest time to parent unless you blow it during the preteen years. If you break your parent-child relationship during the preteen years, the teen years will get worse and worse. And that'll be your hardest time to parent. But if you make it through the preteen years with your relationship intact, then the teen years get better and better. So the teen years, assuming you don't blow it, are the hardest time to parent, and they will get all over your nerves. And you have got to give them hope. You have got to protect their love of learning. And it's really hard because they're going to feel like failures. You know, they know they can't focus. They know math's taking them forever. They know you're annoyed with them. You know, they know they're not doing as well as they were. It's hard.
And you don't want those boys to say, okay, I've just proven it to myself. School is not for me. I am just not academic, and I'm not even going to worry about it anymore. Don't let them get up. Because, see, when they get to high school, they take off. This is where they hit their intellectual growth spurt in a way that they've never experienced and you've never seen before.
It is really amazing. Now, some boys, though, will maybe you've already blown it, okay? And they've lost their love of learning, and he's got no interest in anything, and he's entering high school, and I'm not going to college. I don't care anything about the future. He's lackadaisical. He has a lack of ambition. How do you get through that? Because we hear that all the time.
Well, they need some reality. They need to understand, hey, you're not going to live here forever and ever, okay? One of these days, mom and dad are going to die, and you're going to have your own place then, okay? Yeah. So you really need to be able to support yourself, and let's look at what's available out there for somebody who doesn't care about his schoolwork enough to graduate from high school. Whoa, you're not going to be living in the desirable apartment complex.
And so you can take that teenager who has no ambition and say, okay, well, let's look at the kind of job you can get with the education you have, and let's make you a budget. Now, how much money are you going to need for an apartment? Let's go look on Craigslist and drive by the apartments you can afford on that salary. Let's add up our auto insurance. Oh, I don't know if you can afford to have a car, son.
You don't have to go out of your way to make this look very alarming. Okay?
Oh,
you don't have to look for the real flea bags. I mean, that's what's available.
Yeah, and so you walk him through how much it costs for groceries, for health insurance, for his Samaritan Ministry share, whatever, for auto insurance. Get him a real budget, okay, just like he was moving out of your house tomorrow. And that will sober up a lot of your sons and realize they need to get busy. They need to get busy learning. Mm-hmm. Now, what if you have a boy who has lost a year of high school? It happens. It happens even to homeschoolers. Mama was having a new baby. She was overwhelmed and distracted. Maybe he was sick or she was sick. He's dragged his feet. You get to the end of the year, you realize you really haven't done enough to even call it a year. What are we going to do? And first of all, you're not alone. This happens all the time. And it's all right. He hasn't ruined his life. But you can look at him and you say, okay, you got some choices, son. We can graduate you a year late. And that's all right. But you have to be committed, because I can't make you go to school once you're 18. You have to be committed to stick with it till you get that diploma. Now, our son that was dyslexic decided himself to graduate a year late because he was making so much progress. I told him, I said, I can give you a decent high school education in 4 years. If you wait another year, I think I can give you a great high school education. He decided to wait. He was offered 9 football scholarships and several academic scholarships. Went to college on an academic scholarship. Or you can tell your son, okay, if you want to graduate on time, you got to bust your behind. You've got to get busy and work. And let me tell you something. A kid who's committed can easily do 2 years or more in 1 year. I've seen it happen. I've seen kids say, oh my word, this is my life, and I'm wrecking it, and jump into action and catch up within a matter of months. And so don't despair if you realize you're behind. You just the responsibility's got to be with them. You've got to say, son, this is your life. Let's look at the alternatives. You've got to choose an alternative, and I'll back you up.
You know, what you got to communicate to them is that this is their time when they are going to be accelerating. This is the time when they are really going to race ahead and develop more quickly. And, you know, your daughters will get that intellectual growth spurt, that big step up early on, and then they have a slower rate of growth past that time.
Your boys will bump along, and then they have a ditch there in the preteen years. Mm-hmm. Then they go, woo! And seriously, had a child 14 years old, hoping I could get him to apply for a job for fast food, teach him enough to do that. By 17, he was reading Aristotle and Plato for fun.
It's really amazing.
It's amazing.
It's amazing what will happen, and that's to encourage you, Mom, so that you can encourage your son if he's struggling.
Because they will fly ahead. That child that's struggling in math in the 8th grade, maybe doing calculus by the time he's in the 12th grade, and explaining it to you. It's stunning how they can grow, how boys grow in the high school years, if they believe that they can. And this is where you come in. You have to believe that they can. Because, frankly, most young men become so discouraged by what happens in the preteen years that they don't even try. You have to believe that they're able to do it, and they have to believe it. And then you're going to be flat amazed at what they do. 10 minutes. What time do we stop? I thought we stopped at 11:30. Okay. Okay,
great.
Cool.
Swap.
I'm thinking your time's not matching mine. Okay, all right.
Here's the thing. As you are growing your sons up in your home, you know, your goal on the educational side should be something like this. We'd say to work with the way that God designed your boys to prepare them for the mission that He has for them. And you know what? You probably don't know what that mission is yet. But you do know that there's certain basic tools that is good to have in their toolbox, and it's good for them to have higher level math if they can do it, even if God calls them into something where they don't use the math skills immediately, or any other skills that they pick up along the way. You know, we told our sons, we want to give you the ability to go as far and as broad as you can before you graduate from our home, because we don't know what God's going to call you to do. And we don't know what God may call you to do 5 or 10 years in the future after that. And so we want you to be as well equipped as we can possibly do, but we got to do it with the recognition that God has created our boys to be different than our girls, to be different than their moms, and that means we're all going to have to adjust, we're all going to have to cope to make this work.
Make it a boy-friendly homeschool. You know, if you have enjoyed the way that Hal and I speak, you are going to love our book, Raising Real Men, Surviving, Teaching, and Appreciating Boys. And you can find it at our booth. Now, I got to tell you how to find our booth, or you will never find it. Okay, you go into the book fair, and you keep going. Don't look to the right nor to the left. Mm-hmm. You go past everybody, mm-hmm. and you keep going into the second room, and you keep going until you see the young entrepreneurs.
That's right. They save the best till last. And so
yes.
When you get to the young entrepreneurs,
then
you turn around,
left.
And
you
see
turn
the,
left.
And you see the young family. The young family
is there.
Well,
they have to walk down that aisle a little ways.
Yes, but we're
walk
right there.
Walk down by the young entrepreneurs, and you will see a boat bristling with toy weapons. That is us.
Yes. And if you can't find us, ask your son. He will know by tomorrow.
Yes, we have a cushy floor you can stand on and rest your feet to. So come by the booth. Join us on social media. We are everywhere /Raising Real Men because we have 20-somethings, right? And we also, the book is available in a Mom and Dad special where you can get the hard copy for Mama to read hiding in the bathroom and the audiobook for Dad to listen to on the commute,
yep.
And you can get the two at a discount.
Now, we had a struggling learner, and we learned a lot about struggling learners, and we've got some resources we would love to share with you. If you'd like to stop by our booth, we have a really neat workshop available that was Melanie and our son Samuel, because Samuel, our severely dyslexic son, came to her when he was just coming out of this phase and said, Mom, we need to start talking about this.
Yeah.
He was very self-aware, and he said there's things that people do not understand about what it's like being the struggler, what it's like being the child with a learning disability, and I want to share that.
So if you have a child who's a struggling learner, come get that workshop and listen to it with them, mm-hmm. and we'll help you with other stuff too.
Yep.
We also have a line of classic literature, audiobooks for boys. Our boys love audiobooks. We love listening to audiobooks in the car and redeeming that time. And for our struggling learner, it tremendously helped them to be able to read high school level books and enjoy them when he couldn't even read yet.
Mm-hmm.
But these were two that our boys asked us to do an audiobook because they were important in their character development.
So Howard Pyle's classic book, Men of Iron, is a story of a young man rising from squire to knighthood back in the 1400s. And it's a coming-of-age story that teaches all about the stages and the steps in the age of chivalry. Then also Captain's Courageous, Rudyard Kipling's story about, if you've never read this, this is a fascinating story. It's a spoiled rich brat that gets washed off the back of an ocean liner, and he gets rescued by a fishing boat. But they don't believe that he's rich. They believe he's crazy in the head. And so they put him to work as the cabin boy on their little fishing boat for the rest of the summer. So he works his way home and grows up in the process. It's a really neat story.
We also carry the J.A. Henney audiobooks because they were instrumental in our boys learning what it meant to be a man and understanding the manly virtues. And if you have a struggling reader, they're excellent because they were written 100 years ago. The language is very complex. It's going to give them a great vocabulary and a great reading comprehension. But they're high interest because exciting boy things happen. Mm-hmm. So they're going to enjoy those. So, Hal, why don't you pray for these folks?
All right, let's have a word of prayer in conclusion here. Father in heaven, thank you so much for giving us our sons. Lord, we know it's a daunting task sometimes to get through the day teaching them. But your Spirit can encourage us. Your Spirit can encourage our sons, too. And so I pray that He would be present in our homes and in our hearts. Lord, please keep us safe and guide us into the workshops we need to be involved with next. And glorify yourself in each of our lives. In Jesus' name, amen.
Now, later today, we're going to be discussing passing the baton, the transition to adulthood, preparing your boys for becoming their own men, which starts more in the preteens than it does at 18. And then later we're doing Raising Real Men, all about raising boys. So see you guys later. Thank you very much.